don't know if I want to tell you my secrets.
I'm Sean Cannon, that's John Carpenter, and it turns out he really did want to. But then he swore me to secrecy after the fact, so I can't tell you all about his hush-hush breakfast habits. And that's a true story. From Louisville Public Media, it's The Guest List. Steer into it.
Stop it. Would you stop it? Oh, no, don't do that. Please don't do that.
Now, that's John Carpenter right there. Yes, the John Carpenter. The guy that directed Halloween, They Live, Escape from New York, The Thing, and on and on and on and on. And while it sounds like he's being combative in those clips, he was really just protesting any bit of praise that I heaped on him during our conversation. And he might be one of the most influential horror directors of all time, but he doesn't want to hear any of that. He's more concerned with watching basketball, playing video games, and these days making music. Something a lot of folks don't know about John Carpenter is that he scored most of his own movies, so he's been making music for a while. And if you ask some prominent electronic artists, his music might be just as influential as his movies. Over the last few years, John's leaned heavily on that side of things, releasing 4 records. The latest of those is a soundtrack for director David Gordon Green's new movie, which is a sequel to Halloween. And you know, the movie and the soundtrack, by the way, are both out now. And one of the most interesting things about John Carpenter is that his twin obsessions, music and movies, seem to have been intertwined from his earliest memories, starting specifically with 2 records he heard as a youngster.
One was, I don't know, they put it out in the 50s. I just remember listening to it. Things from horror and science fiction movies. And I listened to that, and I was like, wow, what's this? And I remember that one, but I also remember listening to an album of The Wizard of Oz. It just was just the movie soundtrack with the dialogue and everything going. I was mesmerized by it.
I thought you said she was dead.
That was her sister, the Wicked Witch of the East. This is the Wicked Witch of the West. She's worse than the other one was.
Who killed my sister? Who killed the Witch of the East?
Aren't you forgetting the ruby slippers?
It was incredible.
Yes.
I actually got to study the mix, you know, and how the things were blended together. It was fascinating.
They're gone. The ruby slippers.
Now, from there, movies and music diverged a little in John's life, mainly thanks to his portable radio.
I don't know how I got it. And I had to start listening to rock and roll at night. Then I fell in love with it. I remember Mother-in-Law by Ernie Cato. It's hilarious. I don't know what year that would have been.
But what John does remember is that having that radio all to himself when pretty much everybody else was asleep was the key.
I didn't get into it till I could just sort of listen late at night when everything was dark and quiet. And then I kind of understood rock and roll. I got the soul of it. It made sense to me.
And around the same time a young John Carpenter was finding himself in rock music, he also began taking solace in films, thanks to a big life change.
My family moved to a little town in the Jim Crow South.
Bowling Green, Kentucky.
My father got a job teaching in a university there.
At Western Kentucky University.
And so I was out of place.
It also didn't help that his classically trained father pushed him into music at an early age, and not cool music.
In the school I went to, had to carry my violin case to school. See? He turned me into a bully magnet.
And it became pretty obvious during our conversation that those memories, well, they were still fresh.
Well, you have no idea. You have no idea what it was like getting bullied as a kid because I played the violin. Oh, my God. I felt like an outsider. That exactly is my story. I've always felt that way. Because, like I said, I was a stranger in a strange land.
You can probably guess how he dealt with that.
I escaped into the movies, and I saw everything I could. But then I began, you know, I did love the science fiction horror films. I loved them. I loved Roger Corman's movies, the cheese bag movies. I loved it all.
Then something big happened.
saw a movie in 1956.
He's about eight.
Forbidden Planet.
Imagine yourself as one of the crew of this faster-than-light spaceship of the future, sharing their curiosity to know the unknown, their tension, their readiness for inconceivable adventure.
And they had electronic score. I think that did it for me. That blew my mind. That was like taking an acid trip. Afterward, I never was the same after that movie. I told myself, I got to make movies now. That's it. That did it. Now, that was the movie. I have to make movies, and I would love to make soundtracks that sounded like that.
Nothing's going on except kids playing pranks, trick-or-treating, parking, getting high.
Come on, Dave. You must be doing something seriously wrong.
Death has come to your little town, Sheriff. You can either ignore it or you can help me to stop it.
Call me Snake.
It's going to get a hell of a lot worse before it gets any better.
You see, I take these glasses off. She looks like a regular person, doesn't she, huh? Put them back on. Formaldehyde face.
Looking at things that way, John Carpenter's career seems kind of triumphant, right? Well, he doesn't necessarily look at it that way, though. Definitely not in a linear sense.
Because reviewers have crapped on my work ever since the beginning. I've been told what a piece of shit I am for so long. And they kept doing it, and they kept doing it. So I go, okay, well, fine. That's when the real test of what kind of a man you are comes into play. And I don't mean man, and what kind of a human being you are. When everybody else is telling you that you're a piece of crap, you need to be able to stand up straight and say, you're wrong. And that's hard to do.
But even though John was resigned to that treatment and perfectly fine with thumbing his nose at it, it's not the end of the story, because
everything got reconsidered. That's the story of my career. That part feels good. The reconsideration feels great. The initial being crapped upon doesn't feel so good, as you can probably imagine. And I have a bunch of names I'd like to. I always want 5 minutes in a room with them. That's all. That's all I want.
His desire for some tender conversations with a few icy critics aside, he really is in great spirits these days. Not so much because of the delayed appreciation for his work either. It's so much simpler than that.
I survived, man. I feel great. I made it.
A big part of that late career joy that's very apparent right there is because he survived long enough to start making music just for the hell of it. You can hear it in his voice. I mean, really, it's palpable.
I'm in heaven. This is fun. This is actually fun now. God. Just fabulous.
The best part of it is that the whole music thing, you know, having what you could consider a second career putting out records, was completely accidental.
My wife got me this computer set up with music and stuff to play on. So, my son would come back from Japan. He was over there, and he and I, we'd play some video games, maybe watch some basketball, then go down and play music and improvise. And come back up and play video games and go back to some music. And it's all improvised, and it took place over, you know, 6 months or so. And we had a kind of an album of this stuff, and I got a new music attorney, and she said, what have you got that's new? So I sent her this album, and then all of a sudden I had a record deal. What the hell? How did that happen? And it was as easy as that. It dropped out of nowhere. And I couldn't believe it. So I said, yes. Are you kidding? Yes.
And then came touring all over the world.
That was, they came from my son and godson who pressured me. You know, we can make some more money on this. You know, they're in music, and I wanted to help them, so I went out with them.
And at that point, really wasn't sure what to think about it.
I did not know. I was terrified at first. It might be horrible, and I might be horrible, because I'm the front man here. But it turns out it's okay, and I can actually pull it off.
Eventually, the music stuff led back to movies, but not back to John Carpenter directing another movie. Instead, he was writing the score. For the first time in his entire career, he was doing it for another director, David Gordon Green. And that movie was Green's sequel to Halloween. So you might wonder, working on something that's kind of your baby, except you have absolutely no control over it, what kind of an experience that would be?
I enjoy scoring David's movie because it's not mine. It's his intuition and feeling on what he wanted. And that was fun. I loved it. First of all, I don't have to direct. So that's the biggest plus. All the stress, anxiety, and bullshit is not there. So all I have to do is make music. So the process is easier. We do spotting sessions with the director, and he describes what he wants. And David is very musically literate, so he could talk about what he wanted. And sometimes I just say, well, what do you want the audience to feel in this scene? How do you want us to come into here? Do you want music here? Do you want us to lay back? And so that's how it started, the process. So I was already, hopefully, delivering everything he wanted.
But you know, even though John Carpenter has graduated to rock star status, and by the way, he told me to shut up when I jokingly used that word to describe him, he might still be up for the slog of directing a movie.
If it's right, you know, if I can do it. You know, I'm old now. I did this music video last year. And I shot it at night, and it almost killed me. Good God, it was hard. I just thought to myself, man, I have to prepare for this. It used to be easy, but I can't.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to stop showering you with praise, but I do want to say that I'm a fan of your work in general.
Thank you. That's very kind.
So thank you for taking some time and just for doing what you've done.
Hey, thanks. Thanks. It's been fun.
See you, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The original motion picture soundtrack to the latest Halloween film, which John Carpenter recorded with his son Cody Carpenter and his godson, Daniel Davies, is out now on Sacred Bones. Well, that's all I've got for you this week here on The Guest List from Louisville Public Media. Stacey Owen is our executive director. Kojin Toshiro is our technical director. And we get special assistance from Margaret Darling. You can find everything we have to offer on our website, guestlist.wfpk.org. I'm your host and producer, Sean Cannon. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Cannon. See you next week. Steer into it.